part three of our episode, The Promise of Restorative Justice. In the previous segments, we've discussed the problems with our current justice system and the economic benefits of moving to a restorative justice model, especially for juvenile offenders. I'm Hannah Stanley, host of On Social Health and Change podcast, brought to you by Adler University. Joining us now is Father Dave Kelly, Executive Director of Precious Blood Ministry of Reconciliation, a working restorative justice program on Chicago's South Side. Father Kelly, can you start by telling us about Precious Blood?
Precious Blood and Ministry of Reconciliation, or a lot of the young people call it the Center, is an organization in the South Side of Chicago on 51st and Elizabeth. And we work with young people who are court involved. So these are young people who are coming out of juvenile detention center, the Department of Correction, or otherwise court involved, and their families. And we strive to create a space within the community in which they really feel like they belong, like they're part of that community. We also reach out to families and those who are victims of violence. And when it's possible, we bring those two groups, someone who has been victimized and someone who may have caused the harm, we try to bring those groups together.
Yeah, and unfortunately in our city, there's not a lack of people to work with.
Right. There are a lot of opportunities to use restorative practices. The practice we use most is the peacemaking circle because it builds community. It doesn't just deal with issues, but rather deals with the relationships between the people. In a community in which a lot of times the victim, the offender, live in the same community, trying to renew and restore and repair those relationships is hugely important.
Tell me about some of your core principles that you work with.
There are five really principles or pillars, we call them, of a restorative justice hub. And this is not just Precious Blood, but other organizations that are also working with us to kind of develop this effort of responding to violence, crime, conflict in a restorative fashion. So the first is hospitality. I call it radical hospitality because it's inviting and welcoming young people who otherwise don't always come to your door kind of ready to be received well. They have attitudes. They have issues going on. They are victims of trauma. And so they don't come to your door always in that kind of mood, if you will, to be received well. So radical hospitality means we have to open those doors really wide. We have to work real hard to make them feel like they're safe and that they're welcome. The other is accompaniment. And accompaniment is really important. It's the commitment we have to the young person. It's also the understanding that we don't have the answers, that the young person or their family, they a lot of times know what they need. They just don't have access to it, or they don't have the strength or someone to walk along with them. So accompaniment is walking alongside a young person or a family member to help them access the resources that are needed. So if it's about school, so we go with them to the school. So it's not a referral. We go with them to the school. We sit in the front office. We wait to be called in. We go in with them, and we come home with them. And if we're successful, we celebrate. If we're not so successful, then we do it the next day and try it again.
Plan B.
Plan B.
Okay.
So the other is really being in relentless engagement of young people. So a lot of people will say, well, you know, if you fit this kind of this attitude or this criteria, then you can be a part of our group. Really, we really meet young people where they're at. So if a kid on the street corner and I say, hey, what's up, and invite him perhaps to some program that we're having, and he says, hey, thanks, Father Kelly, but no thanks, I'm still going to be in a relationship with that young person. So I recognize where they're at and don't sever relationships just because they might not be ready to participate in some of the program we have. So it's really important to, if a kid is ready, we're there. Because that young person who says thanks but no thanks, you know, in a week, a month, or something happens, he might come up to me and say, hey, Father Kelly, can you help me get in school? Can you help me get a job? So we have to be ready to have that relationship with that person so that when he or she is ready, that family is ready to make a move or wants some help, then we're there for them.
Okay.
The other is relentless engagement of systems and stakeholders. This is harder for me personally because I have a lot of patience for a 14-year-old who acts like a 14-year-old. I don't have as much patience for a system, whether that be Chicago Public Schools or whoever it might be, that act like 14-year-olds. And so I have to really try to build relationships with those folks so that we can really work for the betterment of the community, betterment of the family and the child. And the last principle or pillar, we call them, is collaboration. And it's really that I don't have all the answers. I can't do it all myself. I work with other organizations, other restorative justice hubs, Adler University, and anyone else in order to work together to really make a difference in our communities.
Our community can be viewed as special because of the number of people that we have and the amount of violence we have in our community. But it can also be scaled into different communities and be mirrored. So this is something that talking about this isn't just about this city, the city of Chicago, and what you do in your particular community. This is something that can really apply to other areas. But while we are talking about what you do specifically, tell me who you guys serve.
We serve those young people and their families who are in the Back of the Yards and Inglewood communities. So we're right on the border of the Back of the Yards and Inglewood. So Garfield Boulevard, 55th Street, is the border between Inglewood and Back of the Yards. So that's the population we serve. Most of the young people are African American. It's generational poverty. So it's a community that has, we all hope that our children will have a better life than we do. Well, in these kinds of communities, oftentimes our children don't have as good as a life as their parent or their grandparent. So it's a community that is rich in just being together and loving one another and caring for one another, but they don't always know how to do that. So, I oftentimes say, because we're real quick to demonize people, to label people as bad parents or bad kid or bad whatever. And the parents that I meet, they're loving parents, but they don't always have the ability to live into that love. So there's so much stress and strain in their lives that they don't always act the way they would want to act if they could. And so it's that kind of a community that's dealing with turmoil and hardship and struggle and strain. And if we can help them find the space and place to live in some sense of peace, then they are incredibly loving and caring people.
A lot of the youth you guys are working with is 90% court involved. Tell me specifically, give me some parameters of what that includes.
Court involved, I'm chaplain of juvenile detention center. So court involved means I met the kid while he's locked up and recognize he's from our community or close to our community. And so I'll build a relationship, of course, while he's there. And then when he gets home, come back into the community, then I hope to continue that relationship. So court involved means probation officers seeking us out to see if we can help with a client they might have. Going to court. This morning we had a couple of staff members going to court to represent the community, to be there for this young person and his family. So court involved means we go to the courts themselves. And so all these kids have a case, some sort of case pending, or have had a case pending. 90% of the kids we deal with are court involved.
What kind of cases are we talking about? Are we talking gun violence? Are we talking drugs? I mean, where are we on the scale of severity?
We're talking about all of the above. So it's a kid who gets picked up for jaywalking and gets a ticket for $500 because they jaywalked in our community. It's about a kid who is sitting right now in Cook County Jail on a murder charge. So it's being in relationship with that kid and his family. It's about a young kid who came to the center this morning who happens to have a warrant out for his arrest because he missed court. And it's creating an environment and a relationship with him where he feels safe enough to come to me and talk to me about that and to see if I'll help him try to turn himself in. So it's those kinds of young people that we're servicing.
This is the On Social Health and Change podcast. I'm Hannah Stanley. It is brought to you by Adler University. And currently we are talking with Father Dave Kelly, Executive Director of the Precious Blood Ministry of Reconciliation, which is a working restorative justice program on Chicago's South Side. Earlier, Father Kelly, you talked about the core principles, there are five pillars, hospitality, accompaniment, relentless engagement of young people, and I'm coming right back to that one, relentless engagement of stakeholders and systems and collaboration. Typically, when we think of the five pillars of anything or multiple pillars, it is to support the ultimate goal. So they're all very necessary. Which do you view as the first or the most important?
I don't know if I can pick one, but hospitality is an attitude, and hospitality is a willingness to really engage young people, to open the doors, to make sure they feel like they belong. It is a value, if you will, of really saying you're important, and you're so important to us as a community that we want to welcome you here. And so that it's that attitude, and it's the first principle probably in which we meet someone. So if someone comes to the door, if you're not hospitable, if you don't make that person feel safe or welcome, then all the other principles are for naught. They're not going to get to that point. But if you make a young person feel like they belong, then you're going to get to the accompanying part. You're going to get to the relentless engagement part.
Because they're getting the not belonging feeling from the courts and from other places where you guys are trying to help them work through that system.
The biggest issue that we deal with is these are young people who are victims of trauma. So they've had abandonment issues, neglect issues, physical harm issues, sexual abuse issues. So these are harmed young people and their families. And too many people label them. So you have an African-American teenager with other teenagers, and all of a sudden they're a problem rather than they're a group of teenagers gathered together. So and institutions, schools, churches included, whomever, oftentimes are afraid of these young people. And so they set all kinds of barriers so that they're not going to be a part of the boys' club. They're not going to be part of the church. They're not going to feel connected to the school. And so what we try to do is really work really hard to make sure they know that they belong, that we want them, not just tolerate. Tolerate means, you know, reluctantly I'll let you in.
Yeah, you can stay here if you need to.
Right. Right. Hospitality is, we were waiting at the door all day for you, and we are so happy you're here. And really communicating that attitude to young people and creating that safety to where they will be truthful with you. They'll say, I need your help, if it's a safe environment.
Now is the time where I want to get back to the relentless engagement, because what triggered in my mind when you said that was the fact that it's so unconditional, and it seems to be like, if you don't want us now, we'll still be there. We're going to be there at 3 a.m. We're going to be there in 3 months. Whenever you're ready, we will still be here. But boy, that's a lot of effort for a payoff that might never come.
It isn't a lot of effort, but it's more of an attitude. It's a more of, you know, I ride a bike and run in the neighborhood, and I'm walking in the neighborhood, and I know what's going on certain blocks. I know why there's 15 kids sitting out or standing out in front of a local store. But I'm still going to I'm still going to call them out by name. I'm going to say, hey, what's up to whomever, and to let them know that we value them. We did a circle on December 8th. We did these healing circles, and we did it inside the corner store, and we welcomed people in, and it was amazing when we created that safe environment. How people really spoke their truth and how much they wanted to be a part of a community, but they never felt like they were invited to be a part of that community. And so that's what we strive to do. That's the relentless engagement of saying, I know you're doing some things that you ought not to be doing, but you're still part of our community. You're still part of us.
We still care.
We still care.
Tell me more about the healing circle, because this is not something that I'm super familiar with.
So a peacemaking circle or healing circle is a practice of restorative justice. So restorative justice is to repairing the harm done and being held accountable to repair that harm. Restorative justice in a simplistic kind of way is how you would want it if it was your child. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't want them labeled or demonized as someone evil, but you want them held accountable. You want them to grow and understand what they did was wrong, and they have a responsibility to repair that harm. So one of the practices of restorative justice, that philosophy, that way of thinking, is called the peacemaking circle. And it's a methodology. It's a way of gathering together. It's based on storytelling and common values, and you spend a lot of time with relationships with one another. And then after you have a relationship with those in the circle, then you deal with whatever the issue might be. It could be healing. It could be a sentencing circle, which this young person has to be sentenced. And instead of the courts doing it, the community does it. But you don't get to the issue until you build relationships with one another. So until you understand who we are in this circle. And so often when we tend to the relationships, then the issue becomes so less important. And you can get to the issue so much easier, more easily.
Because they feel a comfort and the ability to be vulnerable?
That plus the person who has been victimized, the victim, sees that person differently. So, a circle I had not that long ago in which a kid burglarized a home, the victim of the house in which the burglary happened, he says, man, you're not who I thought you were. You know, I thought you were this little thief and thug, but really, you're a victim also, as we told stories about one another, where we came from. And so it reframes that kind of relationship, where instead of an adversarial relationship, me against you, you begin to recognize in our stories and as we tell stories of one another, wait a minute, you're like I am. Your values are very similar to mine. You have a grandmother who adores you just like I do. And all of a sudden, we're not so far apart. And all of a sudden, there's a possibility of repairing that harm done. And that relationship then is restored. See, crime is a violation of relationships more than a code of conduct. And so we really have to establish places in which we can really build that relationship and repair the relationship that was harmed because of crime or conflict.
Some of the programs I'm seeing, and I'd love to hear a little bit more, restorative justice circles, we've been talking about those, mm-hmm. peace circles, jail ministry, and after-school programs. So tell me a little bit more about the jail ministry.
The jail ministry is simply going to the Juvenile Detention Center at Cook County Jail and visiting. It's kind of a presence. It's a ministry of a presence. So I show up. I go up in the living pods of the Juvenile Detention Center. I visit with young people and just say, how you doing? How are you? That your community, and I'm a priest, so your faith community cares about you, that you are valuable. Because so often kids who are locked up and adults who are locked up, they're isolated. They don't feel like anybody's thinking of them. So anytime we can come in and say, no, you're important to us and we're thinking about you, that's the essence of the ministry I do within the jails. So it's really building a relationship. It's mentoring, accompaniment in the jail.
And some of these kids, maybe many of these kids, are going to come back into the community. And that's going to continue that outreach from
all of the kids are going
the relentless engagement.
Yeah, all of the kids are going to come back in a community.
Right.
Now, my dream, my hope is that we have these restorative hubs, the precious bloods of the world. We have them in every community in which our young people come from. So if a kid I meet in Juvenile Detention Center is from North Lawndale, I'll be able to say, you know, you've got to meet somebody and he's right in your community. You've got to go to the Lawndale Christian Legal Clinic because they will welcome you just as I welcome you. And if we can connect our young people to those kinds of resources and that relationship in their own community, then the likelihood of them coming back is lessened so often.
Because then if they're in with a core group that's positive and they feel engaged with, mm-hmm. they're less likely to fall back into...
Exactly.
Into the other life.
Exactly, because they feel like they're part of the community. And when you feel like you're a part of your community, then you become a co-creator. You don't do things to destroy your community if you're a part of that community. Mm-hmm. Like going into your house and messing your own house up, knowing you're going to have to clean it. But so it's your community. But so often our young people don't feel like they belong. And so the role and the goal of a Restorative Justice Hub or Precious Blood or whomever is to help them connect to their community and feel like, you know what, I belong here. Therefore, I'm going to work hard to make my community the best community it can be.
So to engage the disengaged.
Exactly.
After-school programs, if you'd expound on those.
So we build relationships with young people. I often say we're relational first and programmatic second. So the first thing I'm going to do with a young person is get to know that young person. What do you want? What are you working on? What do you need to do? You know, what's your goal? And then once we know and have a relationship with one another, then I'm going to build programming around him. And I deal most with young men. And so I'm going to have after-school programming that reflects the needs of that young person. So we do digital media lab. So we have a lab with all these computers and mics and keyboards, of which I know nothing about, and I want to keep it that way. But these kids are engaged with this kind of beats and music and raps and whatnot. It, number one, allows them to express themselves, and so there's a lot of healing in that. If you hear what I'm truly feeling, and I have an ability to express that to you, that's incredibly healing. But it also reflects, because I never would have got into this if it wasn't for young people saying, man, I like to do these raps. And so we try to engage them in that and then build programming around that. And so we do a lot of art for the similar reasons. I'm the last person on the earth, sorry, I'm downtown, but they're going to go to the art museum. But the arts are so incredibly important because these young people can express themselves and talk about the pain and hurt via visual arts or doing murals or doing music or doing poetry or doing theater, whatever the case might be.
Yeah, if we look at the classics, the masters, Picasso had his Blue Period, and you know all of the people that we do go see in the art museums,
right.
Those who see them, those who go, Father Kelly,
yes.
We can tell what they were going through to some degree,
exactly.
Their emotional state based on their expression of art and music, etc.
This is what we learned too from Adler and others that help us understand, you know, being trauma informed, really understanding what trauma does to a young person, and what we understand is that trauma is not always embedded in a part of our brain in which we can verbally talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have nightmares and daymares and whatnot that are kind of expressions of this, of the pain and hurt we have. So if we can help them express themselves and talk about that trauma via art or theater or something like that, then that's what we're really, that's one of the goals of healing.
As I mentioned before, Father Dave Kelly, Executive Director of Precious Blood Ministry of Reconciliation, a working restorative justice program on Chicago's South Side. Thank you so much for your time. I wanted to mention also that you can find our podcast, which is, of course, called On Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University at iTunes. And please subscribe. And if there's something here that has spoken to you, touched you, you find valuable, please feel free to share on your social media networks as well. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you again, Father Kelly. This concludes our show. Please join us next week when we discuss the isolated and traumatized lives of police officers. This is Hannah Stanley on Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University.